Pull over, lean in. It's time for the Soft Shoulder Podcast. I am your host, Danette Relic of Radical Creative Sanctuary, inviting spaciousness for your mind and your heart. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. The Soft Shoulder is your time. Your time to slow down and fuel up on self-love support, so you can make the most of your gorgeous life. Join me here. Everyone needs a soft shoulder. Hello, welcome back to the Soft Shoulder Podcast. Oh, it's great to have you here again today. I'm really excited to talk to you about journaling. It's one of my very favorite things. It's definitely high on the list of important, crucial self-love practices. Perhaps you are a journaler. Perhaps you have journaled. I think our relationships to our journals are really interesting. Whenever I ask someone that question, I often hear about how they should get back to it. That's the first thing. It's like, oh, it's been so long. I should really get back to it. It's like, I'm just asking a question. It's our choice to journal. This is what's so interesting about it, is that like, we don't have to, and there's no need to be defensive, and there's no need to get back unless we want to. So what I hear in that is the desire of like, oh my gosh, I get how important journaling is, and I'm trying to find my way back. You know, I had a note here. I was like, let's, you know, talk about why it's important to journal. And all I could think of for a while was, why not? I mean, one of the reasons to not journal. It's been such an important part of my life. Maybe some of you share that feeling of, you know, when I was a small child, it was that idea of privacy. It was probably the very first idea of privacy. You know, those little books they would sell to focused targeting young girls usually, and they'd have like a lock and key. That was so exciting as a young person when you know, we really, for our own safety, we really don't have much privacy. So I think I had this little, you know, 5-year diary. It was beige and it had a little brass lock. And I remember being so excited when I got it, but also not having any idea of what to write in there. Like, okay, now I've got this safe place. Like, what am I supposed to write? What do I want to write? I had no idea. Eventually I got there. But yeah, it's that, I think that there's something magical about this idea that our minds are private, and it's one of the only spaces we can go into our thoughts. We can know ourselves, know what's, you know, what we're vulnerable to. We can sort things out and form our identity. It's very important to have that space. Especially, of course, in this day and age, the age of social media that we're in, we're seeing and hearing and communicating, you know, with a lot of voices all the time. Sometimes, you know, we might wake up in the middle of the night and quickly check our phone and quickly start reading all these thoughts of other people. This is new, right? Like, this didn't used to happen. If you wanted to hear a voice, you'd had to go, okay, I'm not quite as old as this, but like, like back in my day, and I'm like, Danette, that wasn't your day. Anyways, you'd have to go like quite a distance to get a book, to get one voice to expose yourself to other than the people around you. One voice. Now we just have like really infinite amounts, and it's, you know, they ask you to respond, to form an opinion, to react, even just emotionally to react. You know, when that used to be just the one book that you had chosen from the library or wherever, you know, you'd made a thoughtful choice about the voice you want to allow in. You're taking each page at a time. You're noticing how you feel in response to this voice. You might close it, go away for a while, come back. I mean, it's a completely different pace that we're living in. So I think especially now, you know, it's about finding our own voice before we're taking it into a really big social space, a big audience. You know, I was thinking a lot about reaction and response and just that idea that, you know, when I wake up or whenever I choose to put, you know, get onto Instagram or check emails, I'm immediately having responses, right? Like I'm responding to the news, I'm responding to a friend, I'm responding to a client. Even before I've written anything, you know, my mind sees it and is already in that process of thinking, processing, figuring it all out, drafting a reply. And especially as I've had a brain injury since February, I've been a lot more mindful about, because I have less ability to do this thinking, processing stuff. I have to be very careful about conserving energy and choosing what I'm allowing in. And I have to tell you that, you know, I've thought about this years now. I've been like reading about, as I'm sure many of you have been, the impact of being online and being in this reactive state. And I had, you know, ideals about like, this is, you know, my intuition was sensing, okay, there's some changes that need to be made. These are the changes that need to be made. I know I feel more peaceful and more in touch with myself and my creativity when I scale back or have different times of the day when I'm interacting online. And especially now with this injury, it's been very, it's really bringing it to the forefront for me. So that's a gift definitely in this healing story. But when I was thinking about reacting and what how it used to be, in big quotations, and today, it reminds me of, so a bunch of years ago, I was at my parents' place, and they've lived in the same home forever, and so that means they have a lot of toys. Our old toys. They have a lot of, you know, they have a crawl space. So when you have a home, a family home, maybe some of you have this experience as well. It's you don't move, so you don't have to make those decisions about what you keep and what you don't keep. That starts to build and come later. And it's, you know, there's good and bad to that. But one thing that we had was a horse. It was a toy horse, a large sized one, like for a toddler or a small child. And it was the horse that would like, it was on this wooden metal structure and it was on springs. So you as a child could climb up on the horse and hold on to the little wooden pegs that stuck out of the horse's head. And you could bounce on it and, you know, go back and forth. It was all like, had a lot of movement to it. Good times on this horse. So I guess it was a gift for my brother who's older and a hand-me-down for me. And then we just had it in the crawl space. Me and my brother are long, long gone from our horsey riding days. But then a cousin had a small child and, you know, we lent it to them. And so on this day, this cousin had also outgrown it and they brought it back. So all of a sudden we have this horse that we hadn't even thought about in years. It wasn't in the crawl space, just sitting in the downstairs den. And that day I came by with a friend who had a small child and I thought, oh my God, that's so cool because we just got this horse back and, you know, maybe little so-and-so will enjoy that. Great, because, you know, I didn't really have a lot of stuff for children. And so the kid comes and we're like, we're so excited to watch the reaction of like, oh wow, he's going to see this horse. It's so big. It's exciting. We were remembering, of course, all of our excitement about this toy horse. And I'll never forget, he stands up. I don't know how old he was. Like, I don't know if he was 4. I don't know. I have a hard time gauging ages of small humans. But, you know, old enough to kind of like, short enough that he could look this little horse in the eye. And so he stands up and he looks at it. And we're all watching him. And he looks at the horse. He doesn't touch it. He doesn't smile. There's like nothing going on. And then he turns to us and he says, "What does it do?" And we were like, what do you mean? What does it do? It's a horsey. Like, you know, just so excited and just flabbergasted. But all of his toys did something. And I realized, I'm like, oh my God, of course, right? His toys show him how to play with them. They light up. They do whatever they did. I don't know at that time, but it's like, I'm like, no, it's not the horse that does something. It's you that does something. And he just, it's like it hadn't crossed his mind that he could engage and create a story around the horse. He wanted to know what the horse did first. Yeah. Anyway, so that's it's a bit of a reach, but I feel like that's a story that just really talks about this idea of like responding, creating, reacting. He wanted to react to the horse. And so for this reason, I think it's also interesting to think about the time of day that we, you know, get in touch with our voices. Because if you, like I have at times in my life, rolled out of bed, not even out of bed, rolled in bed, reached for my phone and just wanted to check something or something popped up and it was irresistible, it really changes the course of our days. We're deciding what thoughts to start that precious moment when we're coming out of dreamland and things are kind of quiet and maybe there's dreams we want to remember. Maybe we just want the silence for a second, but we're right back in there. And depending on what we've chosen to follow and depending on how our notifications are setting up, things can just start getting in and our brain starts reacting to whatever it is that we're seeing. So I think there's something really special and important about waking up to find our own voices at the beginning of our days. Just for that reason. It's also a great reason to just, you know, get it over with. If it's a habit you're trying to cultivate and you're finding it difficult, sometimes just we have less resistance when we're rolling out of bed. Just roll over. You've got the book there. You can start writing it. I know Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way. You know, you may be familiar with her practice that she calls morning pages. And she calls them morning pages for a reason. The time of day matters. It's just, I believe her process is 3 full-sized pages of just, you know, dumping out your brain, just freeform, keeping your, you know, your hand moving, keeping the pages full. It doesn't matter what you're writing. It's just to clear your mind and come into your own voice as a practice. So there's something special about that. About starting the day. There's one, you know, you could be starting the day to just sort of get in touch and just like the morning pages, just it doesn't matter what you write. It's also really powerful to start the day with intention. If you wanted to write about this is what I want from today, or this is who I am today, or anything else, a project that you're working on, a mindset that you're working on, this is where you want to start, right? You want to start right away. Like, so you get up, you get your breakfast, and you're already thinking about your dream, your goal, what you really want to be getting out of your day, what you really want to be getting out of your life. It's quite easy, as I'm sure many of you know, to just allow ourselves to slip into default, into reacting, worrying, stumbling into the kitchen, thinking about other people's ideas, thinking about other people's values, and other people's problems, other people's lives. Give yourself the time in the morning to connect with yours. It doesn't have to take very long. I want to say, you don't have to be a morning person. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh God, the morning routine, I've heard it all before, meh, 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 and you're not a morning person. Gretchen Rubin attests that there are morning people and people who are not morning people. It doesn't have to be like early in the morning. Basically, you know, the idea of journaling in the morning is what I'm really asking is like, how do you want to start your day? However you start it, maybe you wake up at 11 a.m. With just enough time to get to work or do whatever it is that you're doing. One page, one moment at whatever time you wake up, you don't have to be one of those people that wakes up at 6:30, goes for a jog, meditates, and has journal time. This can look however you want it to look. Think about it in terms of when you're coming to life for a new day, however that looks. Take that moment. Take a moment to connect with your voice. And also, it doesn't have to be every single day. I think it's really important that even if we're sharing a lot and we think that we're being personal when we're writing online, perhaps you share quite personally and creatively on your Instagram account, for example. There's something really important about not having the audience. You know, I remember thinking about reality TV when it was a new thing. And just this whole question of how real is that, and what's going on, and do we just forget that there's cameras around us at some point? But I think there's something, I think there is, when we know for sure that no one else is there, when we know for sure there's no audience, that's the way to find out, to be our own audience to ourselves, and to find our real voice. I want to say something else about that, because it's been coming up a lot lately, just in terms of being vulnerable and sharing. And Brené Brown, as I'm sure many of you know, if you don't know, just Google her name and videos and have a wonderful, wonderful time. Being vulnerable, she was asked, you know, like, when is the difference between, when is it vulnerability to share a story and when is it oversharing? And she speaks about how actually oversharing can be a weird way to, like, mask vulnerability. And it's really interesting. She writes about that in Daring Greatly, her book, quite a lot. But she only shares things with the public. She doesn't tell stories or share vulnerabilities until she's worked through them with people that she loves. That's what she said about how she shares, because she definitely shares a lot of her life. And she studies vulnerability and courage and belonging. So I thought that was really interesting. She shares them only once she's sort of worked them through with people that she loves. Now imagine taking that a step deeper. This is what your journal's for, right? This is where you can work through your truth and your vulnerability and whatever's going on for you with the number one person that you love and trust, that's you, before you even take it with your friends and other loved ones. So there's something really beautiful about that, and that brings me to why this is a self-love practice. Why, you know, having this relationship, this dialogue with yourself, yes, it clears your mind. There's so many great benefits, but it's also about forming this dialogue with your wife, spouse, husband, self-marriage person, however you want to call it. I often just refer to myself as my own wife. Whatever you want to call it, with you, with this number one, right? That's what this can be. So in the meantime, so your journal is a place where you can do that work. You can start getting to know yourself. You can start building trust without inviting comments, without editing your shame, without worrying about how it might sound. A journal is not where you tell the story. A journal is where you find the story. I think I've heard people worry about what happens if someone finds their journal. I've stopped worrying about that. I can't control how people would react or not react to what I've written. But I think the real misconception, should you find someone else's journal, is that this is not an autobiography. This is not the truth. This is a playground. This is a sketch pad. This is a studio where we can work out our thoughts. Maybe we pour out the raw anger and grossness so that we can look at it and see what's actually true. We need a place to bring ourselves and bring our emotions. So I'm going to say that again, because I think it's really important, that a journal is not where you tell the story. A journal is where you find the story. It takes time. You might not find the story after you write it all down. That brings me into, I've got these three journal techniques that I love that I want to share with you. And first, I just want to have some, like, permissions. Maybe I love that. There's something about that word. I know it's kind of funny. It's like, who do I need permission from? But there's something about the word that really just lets it land in me. It's like, oh, okay, right. Thanks for the reminder. It's okay. I don't have to do it this way. So permission. You don't have to write every day. Okay? You don't. You can. but you don't have to. I think this huge misconception about, you know, whether you're a person who journals or not is whether or not you're writing every day. Who decided that was the thing, the goal? It's such a personal practice. So don't let it derail you or make you feel like you're doing it wrong. There's no right way to journal. This is just something that you're doing for you. And also permission. Has it been forever? Do you have a journal where you have like maybe 3 pages at the beginning? You dated it, you wrote really nicely, and then you just stopped, and it's maybe it's years and you're like, well, how do I just pick up there in the middle of this? It feels like the book's been ruined. Okay, you can start anytime. You can come back anytime after months have passed, after years have passed. You can rip pages out and start over if you would like. You know, another interesting, so someone I once knew had an interesting journal technique. I don't know why he did it this way exactly. I think it might have been to aid in privacy, but it's fascinating. And it kind of ties into this whole thing of like having consistent dates. He would open up a journal and write on any random page. Now, I know some of you are just like, that is wrong. That is out of order. It's not for everyone. So he would just open it up to a random page in the middle and start writing. He didn't date it. He would write about whatever he was working out and close it. And then maybe days later, maybe months later, maybe a year later, he would do the same, open it up at a random page and write and then close it. And as he did this, of course, this is really interesting because it kind of had this, first of all, it was permission. There was no, oh, when was the last time I journaled? You know, there's none of that stuff. There's none of that order. He freed himself from having any of that order. He also created an interesting journal style that really kind of protects your privacy in a bizarre way. Because if someone was reading it, like, they'd have to be some real, you know, detective and really obsessed with you to just sort of decode all of this stuff, right? Like, you don't know, you know, when he's saying he or she or yesterday or before, you don't know what he's referring to because they're all over the place. So in a way, it was kind of a neat security technique. It's pretty random. And I thought I'd share that with you in case you find that inspiring. Speaking of journals, if you're not feeling your journal, like you just, you don't like it. Maybe it was a gift. I know this happens all the time, especially to people who are known to be creative writers, or if you go on a trip, someone might want to buy you a special journal. But they're so personal. Oh my gosh, I've had a billion conversations with people about what kind of paper, what kind of cover, if spiral or you know, opens flat or doesn't open flat. Graph and the one with the dots, lined or not, or sketchbooks or whatever. I know some people who love going to, you know, a fancy stationery shop and buying themselves something special that it really matters to have a beautiful book for this, just the way I felt as a kid, with that, you know, the special lock, the special padded journal. Other people find that to be incredibly stressful and they'll only like write in some, you know, dollar store spiral bound notebook or just like on the back of some, you know, recycled paper and then just throw it out. There's all different kinds of relationships. The journaling is in the practice, not the book itself. But find what works for you. Don't fight it. This is, I think, my big permission is just to not fight it. If you're having that feeling, just figure out what it is that's going to be easy and feel good to write in. The important thing is that you're writing. It's a lot of pressure to put on a journal. So just like let it go if this one isn't working. You'll see actually if you look at my Instagram account, Radical Creative Sanctuary, I did a project where I, when I was doing some cleaning, I wanted to archive my journals, which I have a lot of in a box. And so if you scroll back far enough, you'll see a line of photographs of individual books. It was an interesting process. If you have your own collection, I recommend doing that. It was a neat way to sort of just go through and reflect one at a time. And under there, I explained, like, they're all different. You'll see, like, some of them just fell into my lap. Some of them I chose you know, the color was really important. Some of them I, you know, whatever. You can read that there if you're more interested in my own process in terms of choosing books. I want you to laugh at how you might be judging your journal process. It's really adorable how hard we can be on ourselves. It's so funny. This is just for you, and there's no right way to do it. No one is grading you on it. You don't need to model it on, you know, the journal that you had in elementary school or how anyone taught you how to journal. You can do whatever you want. And if my permissions aren't enough, I want to tell you that years ago, I remember I saw Alicia Keys was on Ellen. This is a long time ago. And I remember watching them, and I had read The Artist's Way. So this is that Julia Cameron book about the morning pages. And I could hear that they started using language that I recognized that was from The Artist's Way. And I was kind of smirking like, oh, I think I know what they're talking about. But they hadn't outright said it. And then one of them caught the other one and was like, are you talking about The Artist's Way? Are you talking about morning pages? And the other one was like, yes. And then they had this, like, you know, spontaneous bonding moment over this. And Alicia Keys talked about how she could never do the morning pages. And I felt so weirdly validated by that. I'm like, this is a woman who's like, I see is very talented and accomplished and amazing. And she's writing all these songs. And she's doing this. And just hearing her say like, oh, God, that was so hard, made me laugh at myself and just be like, right, you know, we're all humans and this is fine. I don't need to beat myself up over this. So passing that story along to you. And now the three ways, my three techniques that I want to share with you. So the first one is overwhelm. When you're overwhelmed and you don't know how to get in. So this might be you right now. I call this love your miserable self because what I do is I just come to a fresh page. This is when I'm really close to burnout and really stressed and not sure where to start. Like I don't even know where to start journaling and I'm just feeling really overrun in my life and in my mind. I'll come to the page and I will draw a little self-portrait that like reflects how miserable and sad I feel. Now, I like to draw. If you don't like to draw, you can also draw like just a little stick person or just a simple, you know, sad face. A little tornado also works. You know, this some kind of symbol that is going to stand in for you at the center of this storm, okay? It's fun though, Eve, just to, no one's going to see this. So just drawing a really miserable self-portrait can be very, you could draw it with your non-dominant hand if you like. I put that in the middle and all around it, I start writing the things that are on my mind, all the things, all, I just, it's, you know, some people will call that a brain dump. I like doing it this way where I'm at the center and I just put them in little bubbles or just, you know, random words all around myself on the page. I write down my worries. I write down my fears. I write down all the icky feelings. I write down to-dos, things that I'm stressed about, just everything, everything there. And then I stop and I look at it. And I think this is why the self-portrait in the center, the little sad, miserable face in the center is helpful for me because I see myself there and I see all of this around me. And then I can look and once it's all out there, it becomes a lot more clear what's actually important, where to begin. I can look at all of them and be like, yeah, okay, thanks. All these worries are things I can't really do anything about. But seeing them all there together, I have a little bit more compassion for myself and can start to pull pieces out that matter. Be like, okay, this to-do thing that I have, it's actually not as overwhelming as it looks on its own. I'm going to do that now and then I'm going to, you know, go for a walk or whatever. It's, I just find this a really helpful way to come back to myself when all of those thoughts are in your head, they start spinning, just getting them down on the page where you can see them empties your mind and just gives you a bit of breathing room, a bit of quiet. So if you're in that space of overwhelm, I recommend starting there. It's also a great daily practice, right? You don't have to wait until you're really overwhelmed to do this thing. You could draw a, you know, self-portrait of yourself looking fine, peaceful, happy this morning. And what's going on? What's going on around your mind? It sort of has like a mind map kind of shape to it. So there you go, for overwhelm or even as a daily practice. Number two, so speaking of all those journals, you should, if you go back, as I said, to my Instagram, you'll see how many I have. There's quite a lot. What do you do with these, right? I mean, I know a lot of people ask that, like, what am I doing with all this? Where am I putting them? Why am I keeping them? I have a practice that I absolutely love. It's one of my most valuable self-awareness practices. I call it the journal harvest. And basically, I go back kind of intuitively. You could do it systematically. Sometimes I go back for a specific journal. I'm like, okay, I want to know what was going on 2 years ago, or like through this particular rough patch, or through this particular, you know, wonderful time of my life. And I'll take my current journal out, and the one that I'm harvesting. And I often like to do this in a coffee shop. So I'll take myself out with those two journals. And I just read, you know, just go through the notes. Sometimes I cannot make out the handwriting at all. I read the notes that I wrote to myself. I read the things I was worried about. A lot of it, I don't remember. A lot of it is like, wow, I was really upset about that. That seems like nothing now. So it gives you that great sense of perspective, like the things you're worrying about today in 2 years, you're not even going to know like what the heck they were. But often what I find in there too is insights about what was important to me. It's often full of incredible wisdom. And I pull out any quotes or any ideas from there. And then I just do a little harvest in my new journal. And I'll just write, you know, journal harvest, whatever, and just allow them to kind of to bring them back. What parts of your journals from the past do you want to bring into the present? This isn't necessarily about archiving and being accurate. This is about something that's resonating with you. A quote that you wrote down in an old journal, or just something that's important. It's a very intuitive process. Go with what you want right now, what's valuable right now, what you want to harvest right now. So this is like the fruits of your former writing that are going to nourish the present moment. Don't worry about all the things or judging all the things. Take what just immediately feels like a heck yes. Okay, I'm doing this. I would love to hear if any of you already do this, and what you've noticed. What have you noticed comes up? Do you notice the same problems? Do you notice the same wisdom? What do you see that's repeated as you do this more and more? It's a wonderful thing to look at. It's also a great way of cultivating some self-trust, as we spoke about on a previous episode. Notice the consistencies. Notice where you are firmly planted in values or in a perspective, something that you admire. I've found that too, where I've been working through a pattern, a negative pattern in my life, and I'll go back to harvest and I'll see myself give myself the advice that I need now, but like years ago. And I'm like, wow, it's easy to beat myself up there, right? I could go, oh my God, I knew this then. Why have I kept this pattern going? Drop that if you notice yourself doing that, and acknowledge the wisdom that's been there all along. Just focus on that and tap into that, right? No like beating yourself up, but no regrets. Be like, I knew this. I know this. And take that with you. Take that into your day. So the last one is journaling when you don't write, can't write. It's journaling without paper. It's journaling without a pen. I call it sound journaling. This is, you know, you having a conversation with yourself. I use the recording app on my phone. I've been doing this for years now. Sometimes I've used them to record things to send to clients, to friends, but I most use that app for talking to me. It's a wonderful thing to do if you're just, you know, you don't want to sit down, you don't want to write in a book. You can, if you're more someone who likes to move and is someone who thinks while they're moving or dancing, go for a walk. with your phone or some kind of recording device. I go for walks often and just do the same thing. You know, if I'm overwhelmed, I let it spill. If I have an intention to set, I work that out. I have the same conversations. They're a little different though, because it's, you know, you're using your voice. I know that for so many of us, hearing the sound of our own voices can be really weird. I remember the very first time that happened, like playing as kids with cassettes, recording like a radio show or something, and then hearing it back and being like, what? Like, that is how I sound? It was like a whole other person. And it's been through sound journaling, actually, where I've slowly become more just used to what my voice sounds like. And I've started to, like, you know, kind of like it and kind of get a little playful with it. When it's just me speaking to me in this app, you know, I can experiment a little bit. It's, I give the same advice to people about selfies. So, you know, clients of mine have had that, you know, they'll come to me for their relationship with themselves. And for some of us, it's that the image of ourselves is a real stumbling block. Looking in the mirror, looking at a photo of ourselves, posing for photos, just is very, very difficult. And so just like journaling is this beautiful private place to find your voice, I think having the privacy of our phones and where we can take unlimited amounts of pictures of ourselves and then just delete them, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful way to, it's difficult at first. Go for quantity. This is, again, Julia Cameron says, you take care of the quantity. She says, God takes care of the quality. I would give yourself a number, like take, you know, no less than 50 self-portraits a day, then delete them all. Right. But you can look at them and you can start to see, oh, yeah, OK, this looks like me. This doesn't look like me. Start to see what angles you feel most beautiful in and what, you know, different perspectives do for this image. You get to control this image. You get to spend some time with it. One of the things is that you're just getting exposed to it so much that it stops being such a scary thing. You start to get maybe a little bored of your image, which is great. So the same thing with voice. The more I have spoken to myself, eventually it's like it caught up to me. Now when I hear my voice, it sounds like my voice, but it took time. This was not something that came easy. It took a long time of practicing speaking to myself, which led to this. It led to the podcast, which I hope that you're happy about if you're listening. If you're listening still, I can only assume that you're happy about that. You never know where it's going to go. You never know where it's going to go. And listening back, just like reading our journals back, when you sound journal, you can listen back. And sometimes, you know, it's easier to hear the truth under the truth. If you just let yourself vent and then, you know, wait a day or wait a while and then listen again, practice having compassion on that former self. You can take notes from it, the notes that are important. It's just another way to bring in what journaling is, which is getting in touch with your own voice and where you find the story. You have to experiment. It's where you find the story, your story. This is a beautiful way of practicing trust, of practicing intimacy with yourself. It's a wonderful practice that you can do all private, just for you. You are someone worth loving. It all starts with you. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any questions, requests, any shares that you want to share about your own journaling insights and practices, you can reach me at Danette@radicalcreativesanctuary.com. And I'm social media wise, it's pretty much Instagram for me, radicalcreativesanctuary.com. You can see my journal collection there. If you scroll back a bit, it'll be very clear when you get there. All right. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Have a wonderful, wonderful 2 weeks.